At sunset tonight, the Celtic holiday of Imbolc began. Imbolc goes from sunset tonight through the daytime tomorrow. And Imbolc is the feast of the goddess Bridget, often associated with fire in Ireland. It's seen as a profound moment in the year of the energy of the archetypal feminine. And so tonight I'm actually going to talk about sacred mystery. The aspects of the sacred that are beyond our understanding. And I think the first thing I'll say is that, so far as I understand, there's one statement on which all religions on earth are in complete agreement. Now, all religions on earth, they have different words for the sacred. You know, in the Western religions, they locate the sacred in God. In the Eastern religions, there are terms like the Tao and the Buddha nature, and then countless terms the world over in indigenous traditions. But so far as I understand, every tradition says that whatever we're calling the sacred, it's ultimately beyond all categories of knowledge and thought. It's ultimately something that transcends the ability of the strategic mind to define, to identify, to understand, to wrap its head around, you know, that sort of thing. And so that mystery is an essential aspect of the sacred. And so there's an image I want to share. Let's see, I'm going to share my screen, which is something I don't often do in a Dharma talk. And so this image is the High Priestess from the Tarot. It isn't hard to find this image, incidentally. This is just the image on Wikipedia. But I find this a very potent image of sacred mystery. So the High Priestess is depicted, she has pomegranates behind her. That's the energy of Persephone, who spent a lot of her time in the underworld. You'll notice that she has a crescent moon at her feet, and actually her gown in many ways is looks like it's flowing into water. She has a scroll marked Torah, but it's kind of tucked in her robe. So Torah representing wisdom, but it's almost a hidden wisdom or partially hidden that she's guarding. And the B and the J on the pillars, this stands for Boaz Emnachim. In the Book of Kings in the Bible, Solomon's temple had two gigantic pillars in front of it, and the names of those pillars were Boaz and Yachim. And so, of course, Solomon's temple was a temple toward the sacred in terms of the archetypal masculine. It was a solid temple you could see in the daytime. It was a solid structure. This one is meant to create the parallel, but of course what's behind her is not a solid architectural structure. It's a dark ocean. It's depths of wisdom, hidden depths in many ways. And of course, with the ocean, all the tidal forces, all the forces that arise from mystery that we don't quite understand, but that influence us. So it's a very powerful image in many ways, and I'm actually going to leave it up for a few minutes just so it can work on your imaginations a bit. An image of mystery. Now, this term mystery, of course, is a funny word, and we use it in everyday life, and often we use it to talk about, say, you know, mystery novels, that sort of thing. And in the modern understanding, a mystery in that sense is a puzzle. It's a mystery only because there's missing information. We find the information and that resolves the puzzle. And that solves the mystery, you know, that sort of thing. And that's not what sacred mystery is. One very concrete example of a sacred mystery is the Christian idea of the Trinity. In the Christian understanding, there is only one God, but that God is not just appears as, but is in God's own being, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit, and that these three, as it were, relationships exist within the one Godhead. I think you really understand, begin to understand the Trinity well when you realize that it functions very much like a koan, like the Zen idea of a koan. It's something that is designed first and foremost to frustrate the logical mind. It's something that transcends the ability of the mind to understand. You know, any analogy we have for how the Trinity functions is ultimately incomplete. Augustine, in his great tome on the Trinity, he went through one analogy after another, and you know, each analogy was captured something of the Trinity, but was also imperfect. The one analogy that he went to a few times, was the analogy of God, Father, and Spirit as the lover, the loved one, and the love that binds them. As if the Father loved the Son so much that the love between them became a third person. And you might say that understanding allows us, how can I say? There's almost a way in there in the sense that if I'm a Christian and I'm living my life as a Christian, then the more Christ-like I am, it's as if I too step into that dynamic. And just as the Spirit binds Christ to the Father, so the Spirit would bind me to the Father. And there'd be a way that the individual believer might be, as it were, swept up into the inner intimacy of God. And I think that captures something very important about mystery, because mystery, although it essentially frustrates the logical mind, there's a way that sacred mystery is a profound invitation to intimacy. Invitation to intimacy with the sacred. And so it's hard to hold both of those, the unknown, and with that the uncontrollable, you know, that sort of thing, but also the all the vulnerability that's required to receive that invitation to intimacy. So I'll say it's very instructive when we're thinking about divine mystery just to think about how we are toward the unknown in general. You know, the garden variety unknown of everyday life. And, you know, a lot of the unknown that we face is the future, you know. And it's so easy. Jung talked about this. You know, whenever we're facing unknown, whenever there's an aspect of our experience, say, what's going to happen tomorrow, and it's just unknown, the unconscious just automatically starts filling it in. And I either fill it in with Pollyanna fantasies about how it's going to turn out, or worries and disasters that play out. You know, there's different ways that people fill it in. But if you've noticed the pattern in your life, often the story you have about how you're filling in things usually doesn't correspond to the way it actually turns out, you know. And it's actually a very hard discipline to be in the place of simply sitting with the unknown as unknown. Just to as it were, to hold the silence, the pregnant silence that is part of facing the unknown, and resist the mind's powerful tendency just to paper that over with story. And so certainly that, I would say, is an important discipline, you know, how we relate to the ordinary unknown is a very important discipline for how we relate to divine mystery. Now, the unknown, there's a way that the unknown becomes much more intimate when it's the unknown within. Both Freud and Jung talked about this term unconscious. And Jung, Freud himself was actually critical of the term, which was starting to become popular in his time, subconscious. You know, subconscious is a funny term because it kind of implies, you know, that ego's really running the show, but, you know, there's this other layer also that's kind of influence ego slightly, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas the term unconscious really makes clear, no, there's a profound otherness there. And you might say that the central disquieting truth of depth analysis is that ego is not master in its own house. And so how do we relate to the unconscious? And I'll say also the unconscious, even though it's often quite out of sync with the strategic mind, with the logical mind, it's often much more in sync with the body. And so just being in tune with our body is often a very good first step of being in tune with our unconscious. And I think I'll say part of this this journey toward wholeness, this journey toward having a more harmonious relationship with our unconscious, with our inner tidal rhythms, with the energies of our body. First of all, there's just humility, the humility of ego realizing, you know, I don't run the show, I don't have all the answers, you know, that kind of thing. But also just a deep listening, a letting go of ego control, a letting go of ego plans, and just a deep allowing the currents of the body to be as they are, allowing the messages to come up. One quote that I didn't put on the quote sheet, but it's a very powerful quote. The poet John Keats said, I believe in nothing if not the holiness of the heart's affections and the truth of the imagination. And it's important to understand what he meant by imagination. In our modern times, when we use the word imagination, we think of the mind's ability to create up, you know, creative fictions, you know, that sort of thing. And that's valuable in a way, but that's what Keats would have called the fancy, the ability to create imaginative fictions. The imagination was something quite else. The imagination was the ability to apprehend an image, either an inner image or maybe in a work of art or somewhere in the world, to apprehend an image that summed up all the currents in this moment in my life. And so you might say, to apprehend an image that captures what my wholeness is at this particular moment in time. That's the imagination. And so the imagination is something much more powerful and something that we're not well trained in the modern world. Exploring our wholeness is profoundly important in the journey toward divine mystery. I think the way I would say it is that just as the eye is the organ that apprehends light, our wholeness is the organ that apprehends the sacred. And the more we can be in harmony with our wholeness, which, among other things, means being in harmony with our own internal unknown, our own internal mystery, the more we can be in touch and have access, as it were, to some kind of relationship with sacred mystery. So I think I'll share the quote sheet now. I don't think I copied the, have to copy the links here. Okay. So with the Zoomies, here's the quote sheet. You get a hard copy. So, a line from Confucius, and really this is a line from the Confucius commentaries on the I Ching, from the Shogua, one of the wings of the I Ching. God comes forth in the sign of the arousing. The arousing is the trigram of thunder. And in the Chinese understanding, thunder rises up from the earth. So it's a very unsettling, arousing kind of image. And the idea that it's precisely in those moments of profound unsettledness that we are having some kind of contact with the sacred. From St. Augustine, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." Emerson said, "Only to the degree that people are unsettled is there any hope for them." Kierkegaard said, "Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards." The great preacher Phillips Brooks said, "Whatever happens, always remember the mysterious richness of human nature and the nearness of God to each one of us." Carl Jung said, "We must be able to let things happen in the psyche. For us, this is actually an art of which very few people know anything. Consciousness is forever interfering, helping, correcting, negating, and never leaving the simple growth of psychic processes in peace. It would be simple enough if only simplicity were not the most difficult of all things." Martin Buber said, "Real faith means holding ourselves open to the unconditional mystery which we encounter in every sphere of our lives, which cannot be comprehended in any formula." Helen Keller, that remarkable woman, said, "Security is mostly a superstition. It does not exist in nature, nor do the children of humankind as a whole experience it. Avoiding danger is no safer in the long run than outright exposure. Life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all." Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the author of The Little Prince, says, "A single event can waken within us a stranger totally unknown to us. To live is to be slowly born." Gregory Bateson said simply, "We live in our descriptions of reality." René Dommel said, "Each time the dawn appears, the mystery is there in its entirety." Mary Oliver said, "This is the first, wildest, and wisest thing I know, that the soul exists and that it is built entirely out of attention." The poet Wendell Berry said, "Never forget we are alive within mysteries." Annie Dillard said, "Our life is a faint tracing on the surface of mysteries." Pema Chodron said, letting there be room for not knowing is the most important thing of all. When there's a really big disappointment, we don't know if that's the end of the story. It may be just the beginning of a great adventure. Life is like that. We don't know anything. We may call something bad, we may call it good, but really, we just don't know. It's very humbling. Mark Helpern said, "Don't worry about things you cannot know. Let them fall back and recede like the foam pushed aside by the flanks of a ship. Leave them behind and let your heart beat, let your heart power on." Esmeralda Santiago wrote, "How can you know what you're capable of if you don't embrace the unknown?" Terry Hayes says, "The world doesn't change in front of your eyes. It changes behind your back." Tara Brock said, "If our hearts are ready for anything, we are free to be ourselves. There's room for the wildness of our animal selves, for intimacy and understanding, creativity and productivity. There's room for spirit, for the light of awareness to suffuse our moments. The Tibetans describe this confidence to be who we are as the lion's roar." Anne Lamott said, "I do not at all understand the mystery of grace, only that it meets us where we are, but does not leave us where it found us." That one I love. David White said, "The only choice we have as we mature is how we inhabit our vulnerability, how we become larger and more courageous and more compassionate through our intimacy with disappearance, our choice to inhabit vulnerability as generous citizens of loss, robustly and fully." Adi Ashanti said, "To be intimate is to find the silence, the space that everything is happening in." John Green said, "You spend your whole life stuck in the labyrinth, thinking about how you'll escape one day and how awesome it'll be, and imagining a future that keeps you going, but you'll never do it. You just use that future to escape the present." Ernest Yeboga says, "The uncertainties in life are so uncertain for us to determine the kind woe we shall be entangled in the future. When you stay dormant, your life is at risk. When you dare to take a step, your life is at risk. We have a choice. Yes, a choice to choose to dare to get ourselves to get to our real reasons on earth, or to choose to live in mediocrity and conformity. But we ought to note that it is riskier to risk nothing when the life we live is always at risk." Dibesh Midra said, "Life is a daring adventure toward an unknown future. Its beauty depends on how much you enjoy the journey." And Pat Aquino O'Hara said, "When you're willing to be intimate with what is actually here now, to look directly at our experience, we might recognize that this is our life, however different from our thoughts and our ideas about it."